Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Beauty in the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. Together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, a med spa is located here in Pace, Florida. And today it's back to just me and Chris.
And if Lisa's listening to this, she's going to tell me I went through that really fast. So I realized about halfway through, let me slow down just for Miss Lisa.
Do you want to say it again?
But we do have an exciting topic today.
We do.
I think everybody that's here is here for a reason. So hopefully if this is their first one, they'll go back and listen to our other episodes.
Like, I think our topic today kind of targets a big range of our patients, because a lot of our patients have lost weight, like with GLP-1s or diet and exercise, lifestyle changes, all the things. And then a lot of our patients are also females over 50 years of age that are dealing with some hormonal changes, aging.
So what's our topic?
So we're going to be talking about hoo-haws.
Hoo-haws. So we're talking about labiaplasties. What happens to the labia when you age? What happens to the labia when you have weight loss? All those things changes it. And I think initially people think, who cares? It's something that nobody sees but your partner, your spouse. But we find that there's a lot of people who actually care, not just how it looks, but the impact that those changes have on the function.
I think the function, but I also think it doesn't matter if somebody else doesn't see it. I think it's important to people, like about this, just self-image. And we tell people that all the time about the face, and it's really about you and what makes you happy and the way you perceive yourself. But it's also the same about our bodies. And today, obviously, we're targeted like on the female areas, but I look at my belly and think, like, most people don't see that. Well, they do when I wear my clothes too tight, but most people don't see that or don't care about it or don't think about it. But I think about how bad, like, little things like that bother me. And so if it's something that bothers you, then there's something we can do to help make it better.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that's probably one of the most important parts that we can make in the opening, is that the initial, I think, thought is, who sees it, or why should people care if nobody sees it or limited people see it? But the reality is it doesn't matter if anybody sees it but you. If it bothers you and it's something that we have a solution that's safe for, then absolutely people should be empowered to do these things that make them feel better. So it's really kind of a fun episode to also talk about and maybe put some of these things that we can talk about, but it's hard to visualize. Yeah, so certainly if you want to know more about this, we can and see some of the things that we're talking about with graphic examples or photos. We have some things that we do in our slideshows that we can talk to you about here in the office in a consult, or even check out our website, skinandtonic.pro, and we'll put some pictures there that you guys can actually see what we're referring to as we talk about some of these sensitive topics. We've all heard about Ozempic face, right? And that's a trending term that's been talked about a lot over the past 6 months, 2 years. These medications have become, the GLPs have become more popular, and we see what happens to the face with rapid weight loss. And it's very interesting that when we talk about the face, that patients, when we do some of these surveys, they envision themselves looking like they were in their 20s. So they see a snatched jawline, glowing skin, well-defined structures. But when they undergo weight loss and medically assisted weight loss through GLPs, diet, exercise, et cetera, we see that it's not just the changes in deflation from the fat, but the skin itself. It starts to look dull. We have dyschromias or uneven pigmentation. So a lot of changes go on with the skin and the face, but we know this is happening throughout the body. Just this week, we had a dinner with someone who had been having weight loss with GLP. And said, I stopped it because every time I got out of the shower, I noticed that my skin was looking like my grandmother, that I noticed my arms, my knees, everything was starting to look crepey. And yes, she had had significant weight loss, but the skin changes were obvious and apparent as well.
The skin changes, it has a more dehydrated look. It's just not youthful, especially when we feel good. If you lose weight and you feel better, and then all of a sudden you look and your body doesn't match the way you feel. And so that's kind of what brings a lot of people in, because they look good and they feel good. And how many times do you hear people say, I look in the mirror and I'm old?
Talking about the intimate procedures, when we look at the labia, it's fascinating, kind of for you and me both, I believe, that we even have these discussions. But we have so many female patients that have seen us for years that are in our age range, we're in our 50s, and that are comfortable talking to us. And we're obviously comfortable talking about it and treating it. But it's very interesting, the problems that we see around perimenopause with the aging labia. So some things that occur, it loses volume, it gets more flat, maybe it's lax, it's not as plump as it was in their youth, and they don't even know if there are solutions that we can have. So when we start that conversation, it's very interesting how those conversations are in the treatment.
That's the cool thing about the podcast, because after this, we'll have questions about it. And the if somebody's listening to the podcast, chances are it's a patient that trusts us or someone that's thinking about coming to see us. But I love the population of people that we treat, because we do have a really good relationship with 99% of our patients. And there is a level of trust so that they can ask us things and talk to us about things that are intimate. And I think it's something that's important. Sexuality is like part of human nature.
And people may feel more comfortable talking to us about loose skin on their face or their arms. But when they talk about their, you know, vagina or vulva, or look at the labia itself, they may not know the right terminology. They may not know how to bring it up. And so I think it's important to educate people, to let them know that we do have services that we can do to treat this. So let's just start with like the changes that occur. And I think most obvious and probably most common is going to be volume changes, meaning that the tissue sort of looks deflated in that area. And as we lose either fatty support or we age and the tissue volume changes, it makes the skin above that appear loose.
I mean, it's weight loss. It can also be things like you said, hormonal changes, childbirth, and, you know, just general aging in general. But we can treat the actual labia itself. We can also treat skin around the labia. So we have different modalities. We have everything from injectables we can do. We have different lasers. We talk about the skin around it and the labia itself. We also have internal treatments that we can do for tightening.
Yeah, so when we look at that, it's a lot of times, I don't know if patients even think about it, but we have the labia majora, where that's the larger, the most external part of the labia. And then we have the labia minora, which is kind of the inner part of that. And it normally, or in a more youthful appearance, we're used to seeing a prominent labia majora. That's what we see. We don't see as much of the labia minora, but through childbirth, age, weight loss, all of those things in the labia majora sort of get deflated. It makes the labia minora look bigger, larger, more stretched out. So sometimes we need to reduce the size of the labia minora, and we can do that with some of the devices we have here. And sometimes it's reinflating or plumping the labia majora, and we can do that with filler. We can do it with PRP, PRF, PRP gels, or PRF biological fillers, different things that we can do for that. And we can also use some of our energy-based devices. So some of the things like our Plexor or Neogen, and we haven't even have things, we're not really talking about that necessarily, but internally, things that happen with hormonal changes and perimenopause, with some of the dryness and painful intercourse that we can use for internal treatments.
Yeah, I think in the years past, we've been doing PRP treatments for years, and probably 10 plus years, I guess, maybe more than that now. But anyway, we've done a lot of that for the O-shot and that sort of thing for female sexual health. But now I think maybe people are just more comfortable, but the external appearance seems to be more important to a lot of people. And again, it may just be the comfort level with us. It may be the facts that people are talking about it more on, you know, it's trending on TikTok about vaginal aging and that sort of thing. So I don't know what's prompted it, but I'm glad we have things that we can offer.
Yeah, sure, things we can offer, and they may help improve symptoms. None of these have been approved as like an FDA-approved treatment. We're using only FDA-approved devices and products that can be injected in an off-label fashion. So when we look at things like labia filler, we know that we can use a hyaluronic acid filler there, just like we can use in soft tissue anywhere on the body. And so we can use things like our Restylane products to reinflate that. We can mix it with some of our biostimulants, and we often do that, where we mix one of the things like a Restylane Lift, and we combine it with something like a hyperdilute radius. And so we can, by reinflating that, provide cushioning back to that area. And so sometimes there's some discomfort, some chafing or things that may occur as that gets deflated. So we can reinflate that. And that's an immediate result. Very little risk. There are some risks associated with it. If it's not placed properly, you can have some unevenness. If it's placed too superficially, maybe you're going to have some lumps or bumps. Clearly always an infectious risk. So we have to make sure that we use sterile products. We have to clean and make sure that we're using it in an aseptic fashion. But if all those things are done properly, it's actually very little risk, and we get an immediate result. And again, that's more for appearance, maybe some comfort issues if they're having some really some pain or some discomfort or some chafing in that area. But that filler in general is going to be much more for the appearance, and especially of the labia majora. That's what we would treat with that.
And it's like low risk, like you said, low downtime, minimal downtime. You know, it's a comfortable procedure for patients. Patients tolerate it really well. And it's something that reestablishes sexual confidence, which is important.
Now, one of the interesting things that happens with the skin in that area, and we get dyschromias, discoloration, darkness. And again, a lot of patients are going to think, like, why does that matter? But it's really bothersome to some. And so having treatment options that are really effective for that area, but also gentle enough because it's a sensitive area. So we have to make sure that anything we're using and having the patient apply at home or that we're putting on the clinic is really safe enough for that area. So here we use, for like pigment and texture issues, we use mostly our things like our Plexor shower. Occasionally we'll use our Neogen in that area. And for that, we can get some tightening and some volume production. And then we'll use a product like our Higgs HO1 serum afterwards, which is a topical that has tranexamic acid in it that helps even pigment in any area, really. We can use it on the face, the arms, the knees, but it's safe enough to use in that intimate area.
We use it a lot. People tend to darken in that area from years of either shaving or waxing or chafing between the legs. And so I think it's one of those things people talk about, like, or hear the term anal bleaching, but that same cream, that just means that it's safe to use in those areas. So we use it in a lot of the more intimate areas, if you will. And it's pretty effective. So when we're talking about like PRP and fillers and that sort of thing for rejuvenation, if you want to call it that, or revitalization, I guess it could be called. Are there any patients that are like that would be contraindicated in?
Now, if we're looking at this for external features, obviously, and that's what we're talking about today, I make that distinction because we use a lot of these things internally. And what we see sometimes with weight loss, but especially in perimenopause and just aging, is not just the external appearance, but it's the function. And we have many other podcasts on that. We do, you know, O shots, and we have CO2 lasers and Plexors, all these things we can do internally. But we haven't spent a lot of time when we look back on episodes about talking about external appearance. And so really externally, the things that we would want to be careful of and avoid is any sort of active infection in the area. Patients who have an ongoing infection, they wouldn't be a candidate at that time. If they have a history of something like HSV or herpes, it's not that they're contraindicated, but we'd want to be cautious with that. And we'd want to go ahead and pre-treat them with some medications, just like we would if they had fever blisters. We would go ahead and pre-treat in that condition. And then any kind of active or ongoing cancer that's not treated in the area that we're injecting. So again, pretty rare. Looking at things like vulvar cancers. But if you did have some abnormal lesion, we clearly wouldn't inject into that area. Outside of that, really, when we're talking about PRP, regenerative therapies, and even a hyaluronic acid filler, it's really safe for a number of patients. Autoimmune disease is one of those that's kind of a really controversial subject. And with autoimmune conditions, there's so many patients that carry a diagnosis of some form of autoimmune disease that we really have to look at the underlying disease and where they are in the management of that. So if it's well controlled, they're not having flares, we probably would use biostimulants, and I would do this in the face or anywhere in the body. If it's not well controlled and they're having to do bursts of steroids and they're having some flare-ups, they're probably not the best candidate, especially for something longer acting or one of our biostimulants that depends on the immune system responding to get the result that we would want. So in those cases, I would probably, number one, caution them that injections anywhere in their body could cause an inflammatory response that may exacerbate their underlying condition. But if I had to make a choice in those patients and we opted to treat them, I would probably err on the side of using more of my hyaluronic acid fillers and maybe PRP and stay away from some of the biostimulants. And so I think that's the big areas. So active cancers, autoimmune conditions, and then any kind of active infection in the area.
Good answer.
Did I pass my board?
You passed.
All right. So I think, you know, for us, we do focus on this in our practice. We also teach a lot of these things. So we teach this out at the Age Reversal Academy with Plexer owners so they can learn how to use their Plexer devices to really create some of these nice results that we're seeing with labiaplasties and labial reductions, especially the labia minora. We teach P-shot, no-shot procedures, and the O-shot specifically is more for internal function and inability to achieve orgasm. But it also helps with things like our stress incontinence. But I think the key message is that as a provider in an aesthetic practice, we have a lot of tools, a lot of devices, a lot of techniques that we have learned over the years that we use in our practice, but also most aesthetic providers can easily learn to treat these areas. And so I encourage providers to get comfortable having these uncomfortable conversations, because once you open up that door and patients have a trust built already, they'll share these most intimate details with you, and you have solutions that can really help them a lot.
Yeah. I say it all the time that this is a taboo subject until you start talking about it, and then it's something that's real. That's a concern for people. So anyone with any questions, concerns, we're here.
Yep, we would love to see you. Check us out at skinandtonic.pro and tune in next week for another episode of Beauty and the Brain. We look forward to seeing you then.
See you soon.